This is the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm David Walker, and today on the podcast, we're continuing our series where we look at the Falcons 2021 roster. Today, we switch over to the defense after talking about the offense over the past several podcasts, and we're talking about the unit that arguably is causing the most consternation amongst Falcons fans. Of course, I'm talking about the front, the trenches, the defensive line. And if we're going to have the weeping and gnashing of teeth talking about the Falcons defense, there was no other guest I wanted to have on the show to talk about this than the one and only host of the Locked On Falcons podcast, Aaron Freeman. Aaron, thanks for joining me.
No problem, D.W. Always happy to go on somebody else's podcast and complain about the Falcons.
Well, this is a great topic to do it with. Let's dive right in. I want to start with the guys up front. And this is a little bit, you know, difficult to talk about because it's painful. It sort of feels like one guy and then a whole bunch of other guys that are either, quote unquote, have potential or just Jags, just another guy. Obviously, it starts with Grady Jarrett. He is inarguably one of the best interior defensive linemen in the league right now. He's really gotten better every year he's been in Atlanta. But he feels like it's just him. Do you feel like – and one of the things we've heard this offseason from some fans, and I want to see what your take is on this, is that maybe Jarrett isn't the right fit for the P's defense. I don't personally buy into that because I think a good defensive coordinator figures out how to use the best talent he has on his defense. But what are your thoughts on Jarrett, his fit with Dean Pees, and what he really means to this defensive line?
Well, look, if Grady Jarrett can't fit within Dean Pees' defense, that's an indictment less on Grady Jarrett and more indictment on Dean Pees.
Absolutely.
I think is what you're getting at. And we saw Dean Pees have success in Tennessee with a player similar to Grady Jarrett, a Jarrell Casey. Mm-hmm. So it's not any sort of notion where a sort of penetrating three tech like a Grady Jarrett, and Jarrell Casey and Grady Jarrett's games are remarkably similar when you sort of look at them in terms of what they can do both as run defenders and pass rushers. Mm-hmm. So it is one of those things where I feel like that concern is not a major one, at least for me moving forward. Dean Pees will certainly adapt his system to be able to feature Grady Jarrett in a lot of ways. And this is something I've talked about a lot on Locked On Falcons, where, because I think so much of the conversation, I think, unfortunately, has been, you know, 3-4 versus 4-3.
Right. Right.
And that has been, you know, and back in the day, you know, 15 years ago, that was a big deal. That was a massive switch for a defense to make. But, you know, teams have been making that switch pretty consistently over the last several years because so many teams have been running hybrid fronts. The Falcons have been running a hybrid front for pretty much right. The entirety of Dan Quinn's tenure, and incorporating probably a little bit more explicit 3-4 looks in their defense the last couple of years. So that notion, I think, can get a little bit overplayed because nowadays most teams have these sort of hybrid fronts and you're not running a classic 3-4 where you're looking, you know, like the Steelers are probably the closest team to running a classic 3-4, but even they don't run a classic 3-4 like they used to back in the day. So it's just one of those things where, like, I think that concern specifically in regards to Grady Jarrett is probably a little bit overstated.
And would you agree that right now with where Jarrett is at in his career, that he's, he's definitely our best defensive lineman. I think that's no question, but do you feel like he is one of the top 10 interior defensive linemen in the NFL right now?
Yes. I know some various video games may not agree with that. I know ESPN did a thing, and I think Grady Jarrett was like ninth on that list or something on their sort of combination rankings among NFL executives or whatever the case may be. But I would certainly say he's definitely in the conversation right after Aaron Donald. I think Probably most people would put Chris Jones net number two. And then I think you can start making a strong case for Grady Jarrett beginning at sort of the third best interior defensive linemen in the league. I know Cameron Hayward from the Steelers has been getting a lot of that love this past year coming off the season he had. But, you know, certainly in the top 3 to 5, I think Grady Jarrett definitely belongs in that conversation and definitely in the top 10.
Yeah, 100% agree. And as you noted, and I feel similarly, if Dean Pease can't figure out how to use a guy like that in his defense, then that's a Dean Pease defense issue, not a Grady Jarrett issue. Maybe in the past, like you said, with defenses that were strictly 3-4 versus 4-3, that would be a distinction that would matter. That just is not the case, especially with defenses playing so much in sub packages, whether it's nickel or dime. That all goes out the window anyways. And I think, 40, 50, 60% is in sub packages, I believe. And it may even be higher than that. So it completely renders that conversation sort of moot. The next player I want to bring up, because his name has been showing up a lot in this first week of training camp, a guy that last year had probably the hardest road for a rookie that you could have. That was Marlon Davidson, who was, our second round pick in 2020. He came in with a lot of promise, big bodied guy, 6'3", 303, and obviously had a ton of attitude that I think the fans love to cling to when it comes to players like that. But first of all, he missed most of training camp. He had some knee injuries last year. He went on a COVID list for a period of time. Started playing again, had more knee injuries, and even in a recent interview said that he had taken some things for granted. What is your take on Davidson? Because I believe a lot of people are looking at him and thinking, all right, this is a guy we really need to take a step forward if this defensive line is going to have any hope of being a decent unit. Is he one of the guys that you think is sort of the wild card here that is going to make or break this defensive line?
Yeah, I think, we'll probably talk about Dante Fowler a little bit later, but like Grady Jarrett, I think Dante Fowler is kind of a known commodity. Now, there is a little bit more flexibility given the season that Dante Fowler is coming off of, which was disappointing in the season he had the year prior, where it was his best season. So there's some wiggle room in there. But you kind of know, based off of being in the NFL for 4 or 5 years, you know what Dante Fowler kind of is at a minimum, at the very least,
Right.
We don't quite know that with Marlon Davidson. And so I do think it is fair to sort of look at him as an X factor that, how good this pass rush can be. You look at this front and you're sitting there saying, like, who are the guys that you look at and say, this guy has the potential to, really harass quarterbacks in this league. And Marlon Davidson, after Dante Fowler and Grady Jarrett, is the first name on that list. Mm-hmm. And given we didn't really see anything from him as a pass rusher last year, we did, he had maybe like 3 games, as you just outlined, where he was healthy and he made an impact against the run in those games, but he didn't do anything as a pass rusher in those games, which was kind of the flip flop of at least my expectation of Marlon Davidson in college at Auburn, where he was a good pass rusher, but really wasn't going to bring a whole lot to the table as a run defender. And so the expectation for him last year was, in those sub packages that you're referring to that teams are now 60-70% of the time in or more, that was where Marlon Davidson would make his hay as a rookie. And we didn't see that. And so now those expectations kind of, teleport to this season. And, I think based off of the buzz I've heard so far in training camp, it's a promising sign, but ultimately until we get to see him in a game, healthy this summer in the preseason. And then of course, later in the regular season, we really don't know what he's going to be. Could he be this sort of, I'm not expecting him to, basically be a Cameron Hayward or the Stephon Tuitt to Grady Jarrett's Cameron Hayward or anything like that, going into his second year, but certainly a guy that can provide some juice. I guess for me, if to put a more recent expectation on what I'm kind of hoping out of Marlon Davidson is similar to what Jack Crawford was in 2018, when he was sort of the Falcons' other pass rusher with Grady Jarrett and Tack McKinley was their other main guy on the outside, sort of stepping into that Dante Fowler like void for this year's team. And Jack Crawford gave the team decent production, as an interior rusher, not nearly as good as Grady Jarrett, but certainly a guy that made a handful of plays that season. I think he had like 4 or 5 sacks that year. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping for Marlon Davidson this year. And then if he can do that, if he can live up to that, that's something that he can build off for the future and be a long-term asset for this Falcon team. But if he comes well below that. If he's looking more like what Jack Crawford was in his first year in Atlanta, which as people may recall, I think he played four games and then got hurt again. You know, like that's not a, you know, again, not to sit here and write off Marlon Davidson at that point in time, but it would not be what the Falcons need from him. And certainly from a second round pick to have two sort of injury marred seasons, or even if he's healthy this year, to have that sort of impact where it's basically, you know, four, he might as well have only played four games because he was a non-factor.
Right.
The other 12 or 15, 13 now, I can't do math, with the 17 game season. But yeah, so, you know, Marlon Davidson is kind of this X factor where it's like he could be a huge asset for this Falcons defense moving forward, or he could just kind of be just a guy.
Yeah, invisible, like he was last year. Now, I'm with you, and I feel like he is – if you're going to put any hope that this Falcons pass rush is going to be decent at all, past sort of, I think, the overblown expectation that Dean Pease is going to fix everything, it's going to have to come from guys like Marlon Davidson. And we will talk about Dante Fowler in a little bit, but your point is taken. Davidson is not, he's a wild card. We just don't know. You know, we haven't seen anything one way or the other that gives us a strong indication. So reports from camp, you know, they can be wildly erratic. And I would also caution anyone who's listening, if you hear about, you know, one or two great plays in camp, that is not an indicator of what they will do in the regular season. We have seen that way too many times. I've seen way too many wide receivers who were the next Julio who didn't even make the roster. So training camp can be the great deceiver. All right. There's another guy on this list. I think a lot of people thought, okay, he may get cut. I feel like he doesn't get necessarily the respect he deserves for the job he's done. He's not asked to do a whole lot, but what he does well. And that's Tyler Davison. He was a guy that, you know, we pulled him off the Saints, and I feel like he's just done his job. He's not a pass rusher. He is not going to be, you know, Grady Jarrett 2.0. Am I being too simplistic with this, or do you feel like Davidson maybe doesn't get the respect he deserves either?
Well, I think you're right in the sense, because Davidson's a run defender. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've interacted with Falcon fans for a very long time. I've interacted with Falcon fans for a very long time. And for most, you know, defensive linemen, you're only as good as how many sacks you get,
right,
for a lot of Falcon fans. So, you know, for a lot of Falcon fans, Tyler Davidson might as well not exist, because
yeah,
he's never going to be a guy that gets sacks. And so I think that causes some people to overlook his value, because, again, people forget that, you know, 45% of offense is not rushing the quarterback and getting sacks, it's stopping the run. Mm-hmm. And that's really where Tyler Davidson makes his hay. And he's been solid at that. He hasn't, you know, you're not going to build a wing of the Hall of Fame for him, you know, in terms of his ability as a run defender. He's not, you know, life-changing, you know, or anything like that. You can go through a long list of other Falcons defensive tackles that were just as good, if not better, against the run than he has been these last couple of years, if you go, you know, throughout the last decade of Falcons history or more. So in that regard, like, you know, Tyler Davidson's not anything sexy or special or anything like that, but he's a solid role player. And yeah, you need that on your defensive line when you're regularly going to be rotating, you know, eight or so guys in there to keep everybody fresh. Some of those guys are going to have to take snaps on rundowns and give you plus value there. And I think Tyler Davidson does that. But, you know, it's not going to be as sexy and be as splashy as it is with other players that are sort of like, you know, these black holes in the middle of the defensive line, like a Snacks Harrison or something like that, just sucking up all the run and whatnot. So Tyler Davidson's not going to be that guy, but like, I think he's solid. You know, I don't spend too much time worrying about Tyler Davidson or thinking about Tyler Davidson, just because I know what he's going to be. Like, you know, it's just, yeah, like,
exactly.
He's going to be fine. He's going to do his job, and that's it. Like, that's all I need him to do. And it's really my concern about the Falcons defensive line is always about, are the other players out there going to do their jobs? I don't worry about Tyler Davidson in that regard.
Yeah, you said it perfectly. It's all about the sacks. And I feel like that is usually where fans go. And I understand that it's the sexy stat. It's the one everyone looks at. But at the same time, he plays his role and he does a fairly decent job at it. And that's about all you can ask when you start getting into the depth of the defensive line, especially when you start looking at guys who have played and have been liabilities. Like, that you at least want to have a guy that you can plug in there, and you know most of the time he's going to do what he's been asked to do, instead of being a run defender and, you know, literally never tackling a guy or clogging a lane. We've seen that before too. All right, there's another name on this list, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on him because I'm going to get your take on this. I feel like he may not be long for this roster at this point. And he came in, I think fans, and I got caught up in it too, thought, okay, this guy, you know, maybe he's going to turn into something if he gets the right opportunities and can hit his potential. And that's Deidre Snott. He won't even be in training camp. He's on the PUP list, upper body injury. They haven't really said what the nature of that is. He has never lived up to that. He's, you know, gotten a few snaps in a few games. He's mostly been benched. It was, you know, with the previous regime. So take that for what you will. But I feel like there's a chance that he won't even make the roster this year. There was a chance last year, and I think he's sort of squeezed in regardless. What's your take on Snott and his likelihood of even being a Falcon in 2021?
Yeah, I mean, this has been, you know, once the team cut Ito Smith, you know, sort of unceremoniously this offseason, mm-hmm. it was like, you know, some of these 2018 draft picks are going to be hard-pressed to make the team, especially when you consider that of the 2018 class, other than Calvin Ridley, you can make a pretty compelling argument that Ito Smith contributed more to the 2020 Falcons than anybody else in that draft class, and he still got cut. So it was one of those things where it was like, I don't know about Deidre Snott. You know, I think given where he kind of fell out of favor was talking about Tyler Davidson, giving you a little bit more of that sort of two-gapping nose tackle that the Falcons were looking for as they shifted more towards a sort of classic, quote unquote, classic 3-4 look these last couple of years. And Deidre Snott didn't really fit that description. I still think Deidre Snott's a good player. I just don't think Atlanta was the ideal place for him to get his opportunity. I think in a lot of ways, he was probably a little bit overhyped coming in that 2018 draft class, because we knew that the Falcons had a massive need at that D tackle position. And I think people kind of made Deidre Snott to be more than what he was, just to kind of fill the void that the Falcons obviously had at that position, which, you know, tends to happen. You know, people did the same thing with John Kaminsky, where the Falcons needed a pass rusher, and it's like, oh, this John Kaminsky guy could be something. It's like, probably not. Not as far as people's hopes and dreams as far as the Falcons pass rush goes, but maybe in other contributing ways, and we may get into that later. Yep. But, you know, I just think with Deidre Snott, it just wasn't a great opportunity for him. And I think he can still be a solid contributor, a solid rotational piece in this league, but it's probably not going to be in Atlanta, as you say.
Yeah. And you mentioned the next name I wanted to talk about. It was John Kaminsky. And the thing I find funny about him, Aaron, is the hype around him, being from a small school, being a, you know, one of those guys who's a quote unquote athlete. You know, he played quarterback, converted over to defense, in college, and, you know, really raw. You hear all that stuff that, you know, people like to put together as the narrative to sort of build him up. The thing I find funny is that the Atlanta Falcons even bought into it last year. Like, they were doing hype videos about John Kaminsky. I feel like some people forget that, but I remember seeing these hype videos for him in training camp, and thinking, That is a bold move for a guy who was taken in the fourth round and is going into his, you know, his second year in the league. It was very interesting to me, because that is not something you've seen the team do in the past. And yet I still feel like there is some room for Kaminsky to be better and to have a role. I would liken him to sort of what we got out of Corey Bierman early on, where, you know, people wanted Corey Bierman to be a 12 to 16 sack guy. He was never going to be that guy. But Corey Bierman had a role, and Corey Bierman, I feel like, for where he was drafted and what we got out of him, was decent value for that kind of player. And I feel like if Kaminsky can find that kind of role, even though fans won't love it because they want him to be that 12 to 16 sack guy, I feel like that's a win when you get someone like that out of the fourth round. Am I off base here? Do you feel like Kaminsky is, you know, maybe with fans is going to be held back by the hype, but could still turn into a productive player for what we spend on him?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. For me, my assessment of John, he's right on track to where I thought he would be, you know, and I think this speaks to sort of the differing expectations that I had for a John Kaminsky, who when we drafted him, I was comparing him to guys like Jamal Anderson and Rashid Hageman, which, you know, for Falcon fans is triggering because those guys didn't quite work out because those guys came in with a lot of hype. But fortunately, I think the thing that John Kaminsky has going for him was he was not a first or second round pick like those guys were
and was
a fourth round pick, although he did come in with some hype. And I think a lot of that is owed to the fact that he did come from a small school and nobody really had seen him play. And so when he, I think it was that, was it the Hall of Fame game against Denver where he came out and had made a bunch of plays in his first preseason action. And that was everybody's first initial impression with John Kaminsky. And that kind of set the bar a little too high. People didn't realize like, oh, he can't play. Like that's him beating up Denver's like third and fourth string deep offensive linemen. And those aren't the guys that start in NFL games. So like, that's not what you're going to see in the regular season. I think people still have a hard time understanding that the difference between the preseason and the regular season. You know, good players don't play in a preseason. That's usually how it goes. You gotta consider that. But like, I think with John Kaminsky, where he is, like, given those comps to Hageman and Anderson, where, you know, say what you will about those guys, but in years three for those guys, they started to coalesce into the best versions of the players that they wound up being. Mm-hmm. And those weren't the superstars. That wasn't for Hageman, the next Richard Seymour. For Jamal Anderson, that wasn't the next Mario Williams or whoever people were comparing him to back in the day. It was just like, for Anderson, it was a solid run defender that could get you a couple of pressures, you know, a sack or two here or there. I think he had like three sacks in that 2010 season. And for Hageman, we saw down the stretch as the Falcons made their Super Bowl run that year, Hageman, you know, sort of kind of took over for an injured Adrian Claiborne and other players and kind of gave us some positive value as a pass rusher, you know, just bullying guys, you know, late in that season, in the Falcon sub packages. And like that, for what those guys were always kind of expected to be, that was fine. And I think with John Kaminsky, like, given sort of where I expect him to be, like, that's kind of the type of player, like a solid rotational player. What we saw, I think, particularly early last season, we saw a player that has talent that can play in this league, that can be a contributor, that can give you some value as a pass rusher, give you some value as a run defender. Is he going to be a dominant presence or anything like that? No. But is he going to be a solid role player? And I think, you know, a Croy Bierman comparison is a good one for what John Kaminsky can be, which is a guy that, you know, if he's your fourth or fifth best guy in your rotation, that's a decent place for him to be. Ideally, he's like the sixth or seventh guy in your rotation. That usually means that you have a pretty deep rotation, but, you know, we're the Falcons. And so, you know, everybody else's sixth or seventh guys are like third or fourth guys. So that's usually how it goes with that. But I just think John Kaminsky's on track to be, you know, to have his quote unquote breakout year this upcoming season, but it may not be the sort of breakout that I think a lot of people are hoping him to be, which is to be more than a rotational piece.
Yeah, it's if somehow you find a guy in the fourth round that turns into unexpectedly a double digit sack guy, then, you know, that is just gravy. But I feel like people expect the sacks to, it's either 10 or more or you're a bust. And it's sort of a ridiculous expectation because, as you noted, we need guys in the rotation. It can't just be top heavy. We've seen what top heavy teams look like, and it's not particularly functional. But if you can have guys that, you know, if Kaminsky can give you 4 to 6 sacks and rotate in and you know, be a decent backup as a part of that interior line, that has value in the NFL. You're not going to stack the roster with a bunch of Von Millers. And you're not going to, you know, you can't just be boom or bust. So guys like Kaminsky, I think, are important. They have an important role on the defensive line. And I'm with you. I feel like where he's at is about where he should be. And year three is usually where these guys begin to turn it on. And I'm interested to see what he does. I think he does have potential, but I don't think he's going to turn into a double digit sack guy. That's sort of way out of whack, but I would love for him to prove us wrong. Speaking about sacks, we're going to talk about the guys who are going to be sort of keyed with the pass rush. And that's going to start with Dante Fowler. But before we talk about those guys, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're back on the Falcoholic Podcast. This is Dave Walker. I'm joined by Aaron Freeman of the Locked On Falcons Podcast. We're talking about the Falcons defensive line. In the first half, we talked about the interior, those guys that are like Grady Jarrett, Marlon Davidson, John Kaminsky. let's talk about these quote unquote outside linebackers, you know, that they're listed as on the Falcons roster. And I want to start at the top, Dante Fowler. Right now, he still hasn't practiced. He's on the COVID list. Hopefully, he gets off of that soon. I think Coach Smith has been very clear that Fowler is going to have to earn his playing time. And a part of me believes that he actually means that. Fowler did take a pay cut to stay on the Falcons this year. It's in my mind, and I want to get your take on this, Aaron, it's sort of a foregone conclusion that Fowler's not going to be back no matter what he does after this season. I think he would have to like be the league leader in sacks for the Falcons to consider bringing him back. But as it stands, he is, as you mentioned in the first half, probably the second best pass rusher that we have on the defense. And yet here we are. This is a guy that 2 years ago had, I believe, 11 and a half sacks with the Rams. Last year, massive disappointment. What are your expectations for Fowler this year? And what would you consider to be a success for Fowler, throwing out all expectations that fans sort of hype on him?
Yeah, I mean, if I was to put a number on it, I would say my expectations are somewhere in that 6 to 8 sack range. And you talk about it earlier where it's like a lot of people don't realize that like 6 to 8 sacks is what a typical starter in the league gets. And I think the perception is, you know, you're only good if you, as you said, get double digit sacks or whatever the case may be. So yeah, people need to adjust their expectations when it comes to that. When you say that someone is just a quote unquote 6.5 sack guy, people think that's a slight on the player. And it's like, no, that means he can start in the NFL. He's, you know, one of the best players on the planet that, you know, and so, but you know, for me with Dante Fowler, it's about 6 to 8 sacks is probably what I estimate. You know, 40, 50 pressures, I think would be a good solid year for him in that range. He's coming off a year where I think he had 30 some odd pressures last year. And a lot of it was manufactured stuff. A lot of it was stunts or blitzes or whatever the case may be. Not too many instances of him just beating a guy. And I think that's owed a lot to the injuries that he had last year. Dante Fowler's game has always been about his first step quickness and his speed rush. Like he's not a guy that has a large repertoire of pass rush moves. He's not going to use a lot of power. He's not going to use a lot of counters and spins and have these great hands and chops and rips and all these various, he's not doing all that. He's just, I got a fastball and I'm going to beat you with this fastball. And I think what hurt him last year in particular was all the lower leg injuries that he had, the hamstring stuff, the knee stuff that he was dealing with, or ankle stuff. And that prevented him from having that first step explosion to be able to throw his fastball. Yep. And that led to, you know, him basically being a non-factor that, you know, you have one pitch and you take away that pitch, you know, you broke your finger or whatever the case may be. You can't throw that fastball. What do you got? People are going to be hitting them changeups all day long. So like, I think that's really the issue with Dante Fowler. So if he's healthy, obviously, given the COVID stuff again, which he was also dealing with last year, you know, that's not off to the most auspicious start for him. But the hope is that, you know, other than that, he will be healthy for the most part this year. And if that's the case, I think we can expect improvement. But I think if you're expecting him to repeat what he did in 2019 with the Rams, you know, I think you're probably being a little bit optimistic. Let's say that. I won't say naive. I'll say optimistic, thinking that he'll live up to that expectation, because we know a lot of that was boosted by the Aaron Donald effect. We saw that happen with Leonard Floyd last year. And led him to get paid a lot of money. Good luck with that, Rams. You know, well, he does get the chance to play with Aaron Donald still. So it may not be as bad an investment as I'm making it seem like. But yeah, I think Dante Fowler will be better this year. But, you know, I don't know if better equals good, I guess, from a lot of fans' perspective, because I think a lot of fans, now there's even more pressure on Dante Fowler to be, you know, the anti-Vic Beasley, which is to basically get all the sacks that Vic Beasley did not get these last couple of years, or Tack McKinley these last couple of years, which, you know, is pretty much all the sacks. You know, he'd have to have a 35-sack season or something like that to live up to those expectations. But, you know, unfortunately for Dante Fowler, he's not going to necessarily do that. But, you know, hopefully he puts the best foot forward, because as you say, chances are pretty high. I think part of his restructure was to void next year's contract. So he does become a free agent after the season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's obviously in his best interest to have as good a season as he possibly can have, so that somebody else will be asked to pay him.
Yeah. And that's, Yeah, I hate it for Fowler. I feel like he did get sort of a bad rap after last year. He was injured. He's still young. He's 27. You know, if another team does sign him, they're still getting a player who is going to be in his physical prime at least. But I'm with you. I feel like, okay, 6 to 8 sacks. I feel like for what we're currently paying him, not the original contract, which was an abomination, but for what we're currently paying him, it's ballpark. It's in the market range for 6 to 8 sacks for a guy who's going to be one of your better pass rushers on the team. It's not necessarily a guy who's going to be a game changer, but if you expect him to be a game changer on the pass rush at this point, you haven't been watching a whole lot of Dante Fowler. And for what it's worth, you know, it's 1 year. And if he doesn't work out, then we're done. And, you know, that will be one of the last terrible signings of the Dimitroff era that we'll have to deal with. And thankfully, I do think the injury was a big part of that. And as you mentioned, great analogy with the fastball pitcher. If you take that away from him, it's going to cripple his production. So hopefully this year he's going to come into camp healthy once he gets off the COVID list. And hopefully he gets off that list soon, or else I'm going to be a little bit concerned. Let's talk about some of the other guys who are also going to be expected to be a part of that pass rush. Two names in particular. I don't want to get too deep because there's some guys I'm not even sure are going to make the roster. But the last two names I sort of want to talk about, Steven Means and Jacob Tuioti Mariner, whose last name I think I finally, for the first time, have pronounced correctly on the podcast. Let's start with Steven Means, because I think we picked him up from Philadelphia, if I remember right. He's a veteran. He's 30 years old. He's been in the league for 7 years now. What do you think he has to offer this defensive line this year?
Yeah, I think when you look at Dean Pease's defense, and the way I've sort of likened it, is like Dean Pease has had a lot of success, whether it was in Baltimore or Tennessee, having a sort of designated pass rusher. You know, in Tennessee, that was Cameron Wake in 2019. In Baltimore, it was Elvis Dumervinville opposite Terrell Suggs, right? So a guy that, to Falcon fans, think of what Dwight Freeney was for us in 2016, where a guy that's his job is just to basically come in on third downs and be a designated pass rusher. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the Falcons roster right now, they don't really have that, right? Like Dante Fowler is their main edge rusher, but he's basically going to be our Terrell Suggs, our Harold Landry in that regard, to use past DMP's players. And who's going to be the guy that's going to be that pass rush specialist? And right now, Steven Means is probably the best option for the Falcons, which is part of the reason why, the outlook doesn't look as rosy. Steven Means is a solid player, but, spent several years in Philadelphia, being productive in the preseason, but never quite good enough to crack their rotation. But we know for many years, Philadelphia has had one of the deepest D lines in the world. So that's not a huge negative against Steven Means. I think last year he showed that he was a competent rotational player. But again, Steven Means is one of those players that should be like the fifth or sixth guy in your rotation. And unfortunately, because of all the injuries that the Falcons were dealing with up front, he kind of had to be the third guy in their rotation. And he's just not that dude. And so I think this year, given the expectations that if you can get healthy years from Fowler and Jared and Kaminsky and Davidson and all these guys, Steven Means can sort of step in and sort of be the most polished of the remaining pass rushers beyond Dante Fowler on the edge, and give you some value there. But obviously, when we're comparing him to players like Elvis Dumervil, who at one point led the NFL in sacks, and unlike Vic Beasley, wasn't a outlier type of season for him. Cameron Wake, who's one of the more prolific pass rushers in NFL history over the last decade plus, Steven Means is not going to live up to those shoes. So I feel like Steven Means is a good, solid player, but I think clearly there's room for improvement there from a team standpoint with the Falcons, where they could get someone who may be a little bit more proven, a little bit more better. Because Steven Means has come off his most productive year as a pass rusher in the NFL, and I think he had like 23 pressures last year. So like ideally you want that player, that fourth guy in your rotation to be getting you 40, 50 pressures. So
right,
two or three times, what we got from Steven Means last year. And again, that was with Steven Means probably playing the most he's ever played, which you don't necessarily assume will be a repeat this year. So you're looking at kind of a 15, 20 pressure guy you know, for a spot where you kind of want, you know, double or triple that.
Yeah. He's, and this feels like the story now with the Falcons defensive line. You know, we've got a great player at the top, but then you have, you start getting into guys that do have value, you know, again, sort of like Kaminsky and in the conversation we had there earlier, these are guys that have value. They're not guys that necessarily should be on the street. But like the Falcons have a bunch of guys who should be deeper in the rotation who are early in the rotation. And I think that's that is sort of the rub with the defensive line. You've got one guy who is worth all the money, and you've got a bunch of guys who should be, you know, three or four spots back on the defensive line rotation. And yet they're like number two, number three, number four, instead of being number five, number six, number seven. And I feel like that's where we're sort of hitting a quality issue with the total depth of this defensive line. It just falls off precipitously after Grady Jarrett with the, again, the wild card of Marlon Davidson. The other name that I mentioned previously, Jacob Tuioti Mariner. Again, I feel like I'm really number two. and this, he's a player that's pretty interesting. You know, spent some time on the Falcons practice squad, has sort of worked his way into the rotation, you know, really had a decent season again for what he was being tasked with last year. And yet he's another player that is probably going to get a lot of snaps right now in camp. He's getting, you know, first team snaps simply because of, you know, Fowler being out, but also because of the quality being poor. What do you make of Mariner and his role as well on this defensive line?
Well, you used Croy Bierman earlier to compare with John Kaminsky, but I think Tuioti Mariner,
I'm trying, yes. I'm
trying to go, yeah, we're trying to keep the streak alive. you know, I think his game is very similar to what Croy's was in terms of expectations, in terms of what he could bring to the table, going back to the Mike Nolan years and whatnot in Atlanta with Croy Bierman. I think JTM, that way I can
I like it.
Yeah. But I think with him, like he's a solid, again, it's the same conversation we've been having. He's a solid role player. He can play the run. He can give you some value as a pass rusher. We've seen moments from him as a pass rusher these last couple of years when he's gotten opportunities, in large part thanks to injuries, forcing the Falcons to have to play a guy that probably under normal circumstances and probably for a lot of NFL teams these last couple of years would have been a practice squad player. But for the Falcons, because of the injuries that they've had at defensive end and outside linebacker, has been forced into the lineup. And I think he's done a good job with his opportunities. Again, he's not a guy that's going to light the world on fire, but if you're just looking for a role player that can set the edge against the run, that can give you a little bit of juice as a pass rusher, that is functional in coverage. I know he was a little up and down there last year, but I saw some promising signs that, you know, if given more work in that arena, he can improve there. You know, he's just kind of a nice, solid role player that can also give you positive value on special teams. He was like third in the NFL last year in special teams tackles.
Yeah.
So like he's a solid role player. The problem is, again, he probably should be like the seventh or eighth guy in a rotation that mostly plays special teams. And occasionally when someone needs a breather, oh, put JTM out there. He'll give you positive reps, you know, for these four or five snaps while we wait on, you know, whoever, edge rusher number one or number two to get that breather. That's what he should be. But unfortunately, as you just mentioned, because we're the Falcons and, you know, he's a starter. He's going to be our number two pass rusher this year. And that's just the way it is. You know, we can't have those things.
this is why I brought you on the podcast for this particular topic. The number of times, Aaron, that you and I, in just this short 40 minutes, the number of times you and I have said, oh, you know, he's a quality role player. He's a quality role player. That is coming up way too much for this depth chart. And I think, again, like I love those role players. That's how you build out a proper roster. But when those role players are punching above their weight, that's where things begin to fall apart. And I love what, you know, JTM, thank you, did last year for what his role was supposed to be. But my God, if we're counting on him as, you know, one of the anchors for our pass rush, it doesn't feel like this is going well. So the last name I want to bring up, and you may not have any strong takes. I personally don't, He's the only other guy I think that's got, you know, significant playing time in the NFL. Emmanuel Ellerbe, he's, you know, outside linebacker. He seems undersized to me. Maybe I'm reading that wrong, but where do you see him fitting in, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, when we signed Ellerbe or re-signed Ellerbe, because he was an undrafted free agent from 2018, I had to go back and listen to some podcasts from the summer of 2018 to be like, what was I saying about Emmanuel Ellerbe? And it wasn't a whole lot to say about him because he just didn't necessarily make a huge impression on me that summer, combing through my notes and whatnot. So I'll be curious to see if he does get work at outside linebacker. He was an inside linebacker previously. Spent the bulk of his time playing middle linebacker. And I guess I'm expecting him to sort of fill the role that Brandon Copeland was expected to fill as a backup inside linebacker. Now that due to the release of Barkevius Mingo and the COVID right. issues with Dante Fowler, it seems like the Falcons are giving Brandon Copeland a little bit more run as an outside linebacker, which is a role that he's previously performed at a reasonably high level. Like when we talk about the lack of proven pass rushers on this team, if you're looking for someone other than Grady Jarrett or Dante Fowler that has had more than like 4 sacks in a season and more than 30 pressures in a season, Brandon Copeland is the only guy that did it. He did it in 2018 with the Jets as an outside linebacker in their 3-4 defense. So again, a guy that previously was our backup middle linebacker now is technically our third most proven pass rusher. So again, this becomes a broken record. And it's like, as you say, like the Falcons have the point is like they have guys that are legit NFL caliber players. Mm-hmm. They just don't have guys that are legit NFL caliber starters, I guess you would say, in terms of what this group is. It's a whole bunch of guys, as you said, and as I've said, that on a quality defensive line, a quality rotation would probably be the 4th through 8th guy in that rotation, as opposed to the top three. And the Falcons just kind of have a one, probably in Dante Fowler. What we're realizing is instead of being the 2 that we paid him to be, he's now really a 3rd or 4th guy. I mean, when you look at his best years elsewhere, he was kind of the 3rd or 4th guy in LA. And then you're hoping maybe Marlon Davidson goes into that mix. And then you just have a bunch of guys that like, hey man, if Steven Means or JTM or Emmanuel Ellerbe or Brandon Copeland can be a halfway decent 5, like, look, beggars can't be choosers. And you know, that's always the phrase that I wind up saying when it comes to any discussions of the Falcons pass rush, because we're always the beggars rather than the choosers. So it is what it is. I've gotten used to it. You know, my hope is that next offseason, the Falcons will have a little bit more money and we can sort of make this a non-issue moving forward, but we'll see.
Yeah. And last name, I brought up Ellerbe, but really the rookie, I think, belongs in this last spot. We'll close out the podcast with this. Adetokunbo Ogundeji out of Notre Dame. I feel like
how did you get that name better than Jacob
JTM?
Yeah. Even though as I was saying it, I was about to mess it up as well. So now it makes sense. Okay, never mind. Continue, proceed.
Don't ask me to say his name accurately twice in a row. I get tongue-tied, and I apologize to all the players when I do that. Steven Means, I got your back then. But Ogundeji, you know, he's. I think there's some expectation again. Unrealistic. He's a 5th rounder. He's a 5th rounder for a reason, that he's going to step in and, you know, be a part of the rotation. He'll undoubtedly be a part of the rotation. But for me, I feel like, okay, he's a rookie. This rookies, pass rushers, that is really hit or miss, especially when you're talking about guys who were drafted on day 3. What kind of expectations do you think fans should have for Ogundeji as a 5th round outside linebacker for the Falcons this year?
My expectations, to be blunt about it, is that he'll probably be inactive for most of the season under normal circumstances. But again, we're talking about the Falcons here, so who knows what normal is for them when it comes to their pass rush, and they just may need all the help that they can get. So like that would be my normal expectations, is like this is kind of a redshirt year for Ogundeji. Mm-hmm. He might get, you know, if there's injuries, you could throw him in there, maybe put him on special teams, get a little bit of work there, but not a whole lot to glean from this rookie season. But as we just laid out, like, you know, what are the Falcons' alternatives? Steven Means, JTM, Brandon Copeland. Yeah, you know, like, yeah. Might as well. If there's an opportunity to see what he can do, might as well get him the reps. I mean, we're talking about JTM, a guy who I mentioned has been on the – wouldn't on a normal NFL team, a good NFL team, as it were, not the Falcons. it would be, you know, a practice squad player. But, you know, he's gotten work and you can say it's improved his development, that he's probably further along today in 2021 than he would have been on a quote unquote normal team, just spending all that time on the scout team and the practice squad for the last couple of seasons. So maybe you can take the same tack with Ogundeji and think, look, you know, like it may not necessarily lead to him being this difference maker down the road, but if we can just get another sort of solid rotational piece for us and fast track that sooner rather than later by getting him those reps this year that under normal circumstances he would not get, you know, it makes sense to me in that regard, again, because, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
I love it. All right. With all this talk that we've had, it feels like we should be bringing Babs back for one last season in Atlanta.
Look, you know, how old is Babs at this point? He's got to be like 40.
Right? He's probably up there. Yeah, pretty close.
So, you know, he probably could come in day one and be probably top three pass rusher on the Falcons defense at age 40. So.
That makes me so sad.
You know,
and it's not I love Babs. It's the fact that what you said is probably actually really true. Oh yeah. So Aaron, one last question for you and we wrap this up. Do you think the Falcons should look to bolster the pass rush, in free agency? At this point, I mean, we saw Justin Houston just signed. He was the name I think many Falcons fans were sort of watching to see, you know, what he would do. Do you think the Falcons should try to bolster it? Or at this point, do you think, just, you know, check it in because the defense isn't going to be much this year?
Look, I'm never going to be against a team trying to improve itself. I would be all for the Falcons trying to upgrade this position to get better at this position, even if it's only slightly better at this position. And obviously you're probably not, because of guys like Ingram and Houston already signing with other teams, you're probably not going to get this big, bold, splashy player that's a proven pass rusher that's coming off you know, 2 years ago had 10 sacks or anything like that. You're right. Probably going to have to be monitoring the waiver wire at the end of the summer, and maybe you'll get some developmental guy that, you know, had a halfway decent preseason or something like that. And that's probably the best case scenario. I mean, the guy, the Falcons just picked up, Tuzar Skipper, you know, lit up the preseason 2 years ago and sort of like, now you're just like, hey man, you know, do it again. And maybe that'll give us some hope for the future. So I'm not against the Falcons adding a pass rusher, but I also know that the pickings may be slim, as they say, moving forward. And so I wouldn't begrudge them if they don't feel it necessary to make a move there, but certainly I'm not going to begrudge a team for trying to improve itself in any way, any shape or form possible.
Does anyone have the number for Dwight Freeney? I see he's just 41 years old.
That spin move is eternal. So he'll be 65 years old and that spin move will still work.
You are not lying. That is the best spin move. It was so good. It rubbed off on, oh my God, what's his name? Brooks Reed.
There you go.
Rubbed off on Brooks Reed while he was here. It was so good. All right, Aaron, really appreciate you coming on the podcast. I know we had to talk about defensive line. It's fun to rip on the Falcons a little bit. I do think, you know, that they're going to address this position in future draft classes. I think it's fair to say that you and I both agree that if you have any like high expectations for this defensive line this year, you should probably let those go. All right. Well, why don't you remind our listeners where they can find you and what you have going on?
Yeah, people will check me out on Locked On Falcons Monday through Friday, every day. If you want to get 30-minute or now usually about 40-minute rundown of the latest on the Atlanta Falcons and what expectations, you know, it's not as dour as I usually am. I'm trying to focus on the positives, at least for this week. And we're talking about a lot more about players like Kyle Pitts and AJ Terrell, Deion Jones, and those things. Some of the positives of the Falcons, the handful of positives that you can look at this roster and see. Those are some of the topics that we're going to be discussing on Locked On Falcons. And of course, people can check me out on Twitter at FalcFans. It's FalcFans.
Awesome. As for me, guys, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW. Updates for this podcast at FalcoholicPod. and of course our articles daily at thefalcoholic.com. So for Aaron Freeman of the Locked On Falcons podcast, this is David Walker. Thank you guys for listening in. We'll talk with you next time.